Welcome to What's Left, a weekly political discussion challenging the mainstream left. I'm Eduardo Barca with co-host, teacher and socialist Andy Lipson and community organizer and socialist Kenny Cepeda. We are online at what-s-left.webno.com. Please subscribe, rate, review, and share your favorite episode wherever you found this episode. Thank you. Today, we'll be joined by Michael Caine from New York, a teacher and organizer as part of his union caucus. His position around the vaccines and teachers having a choice in the matter as they've teachers and parents have comprised together to be able to share what their positions are and teachers need to have a choice whether they are going to be vaccinated or not. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks so much for having me.
Why don't we start with the basics then? I think it's important for us to get to know who you are, your background. Might be worth sharing anything that you think is important to relate it to the current topic that we will be discussing about.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Michael Caine. I am a New York City public school teacher for almost 14 years now. I love my job. I love working in the city. And this past August in New York City, my union actually announced that teachers and students and everybody in a school building would be mandatorily tested for COVID randomly. And that led to a bunch of questions, which led to the realization that mandatory testing in school was very likely a prelude to mandatory vaccination. And so we started New York Teachers for Choice. Our website is nyteachersforchoice.org. So that's nyteachersforchoice.org. You can check us out there. It started with just me and one other teacher. Now we have a 13-member steering committee. We have an email list of about 250 people. And we're reaching tens of thousands of people. We also have a petition called New York Teachers Against Vaccine Mandates for Educators that currently has over 20,000 signatures. And oddly enough, that petition was started 6 months before COVID, because in New York, it was starting to become obvious that they were going to try to put vaccine mandates on teachers. In the summer of 2019, we started to see signs of that. And that's why I started the petition. So you'll notice in the petition, if you check it out at our website and click on the petition, you'll notice there's no mention of COVID or the coronavirus or SARS-CoV-2, because this is about much more than COVID-19. This is about forcing medical mandates on teachers and everyone to keep your job and to just exist in society. So that's the unfortunate direction that we are heading. So we organized around that. And there's a lot of energy and a lot of resistance to these forced medical mandates that I'm very, very excited to be a part of.
So that's actually, I do want to talk about the vaccine section of it, but your group is also opposed to, it sounds like, the forcing people to take the PCR test as well, right?
Oh yeah, so we're not opposed to testing in schools. The union and the city believe that PCR COVID testing will keep the schools safe. Maybe they're right about that. I think their intention is in somewhat of a good place, but we're opposed to mandatory COVID testing, to forcing it. We've heard instances of six-year-old children being forced tested while they were crying or even wetting themselves. So, I mean, what the hell is that? I mean, where are we as educators, as politicians, as community leaders going if people are coercing little kids without their parents there, with scary people that are completely in like hazmat material, masks, shield, a very long Q-tip, and 6 and 7-year-olds that are really, really scared. In New York City, they're not even allowing parents to submit tests from their own doctors. I mean, what is that about? And so it just raises all of these questions. And in August, when it was first said to me, the question I had was, is my specimen protected? Is the DNA on my specimen protected? If I get tested in school, am I guaranteed that that specimen is destroyed after you get a COVID result? And the district rep in my union, who's a great guy and I have a good relationship with, said, I'll try to find out for you. And he couldn't find out. No one in the union would tell him. So we called, we emailed the union, the mayor, the head of schools, Richard Carranza, all these leaders in New York City we reached out to. Crickets. We heard nothing back. And it really surprised me because I thought it was going to be like, oh, no, of course, Mike, your specimen's protected. It's destroyed. But they didn't want to say anything. So then we started action alerts. We had hundreds of teachers and parents calling the mayor de Blasio, head of schools, Richard Carranza, the UFT president. UFT is my union in New York City, very powerful union. The president, Michael Mulgrew, we all bombarded him 1 week with all these emails and calls. Still no response. But when we got Harvard-trained legendary civil rights attorney Michael Sussman to represent us and send letters, then they started to respond to us. Then we got answers. So if teachers and parents asked the question, we weren't good enough for them to respond to. But once a highly trained and accredited lawyer was reaching out, they started to respond. So even Mr. Sussman didn't really think their responses to us were adequate after an exchange of letters and different things published. So we sued the New York City Department of Education in a case called Kane versus NYC DOE. And we ended up winning a court-ordered stipulation that said the specimens taken must be destroyed after a positive or negative COVID result is found, and the specimens cannot be used for anything else. So we were happy to get that stipulation. But at that point, all of the contracts weren't public yet. So they were still keeping the contract secret. But these are public documents. They should not be kept secret. So I was working with another law firm, Seery & Glimstad, Aaron Seery's law firm. Aaron Seery does all of the work for Dell Bigtree's I Can. And they didn't represent us, but we had a similar goal. So they had filed Freedom of Information Act requests. They had to sue because the FOIA requests were ignored. And eventually one of the contracts came out. And the contract was from a lab called Fulgent Genetics. And Fulgent Genetics, actually forgot to say this, wouldn't you know, they own genetic library catalogs. That's their main business. So they profit from owning and exploiting people's DNA. They can legally do this, right? So that was one of the things that first sparked, like, hey, is our specimen protected? When we finally got the original contract, we saw in the original contract that they made, they didn't say they can do anything with our specimen besides COVID test, but they never said they had to explicitly destroy the specimen. So there was a loophole in the contract where they could have kept our specimens had they chose for months, for years, for decades, just waiting for a moment where there was a change in law or some other loophole that would allow them to go into the specimen. So I'm not accusing Fulgent Genetics of doing that. All I'm saying is that the contract never even covered it. So I'm actually very happy that we were able to close that loophole legally. There's still people that come to me and say, Mike, I don't trust them anyway. I still don't want to get tested. I get that. I respect that. But at least legally, we did close that loophole, and hopefully it does hold up. So if we do ever find out that Fulgent Genetics or any of the DOE contractors did save our specimens, use them for something else, that we have an enforceable court-ordered legal agreement that we could sue people and take people to court on. So that's kind of the testing part. We still have some battles going on the testing. Children's Health Defense, actually, Robert F. Kennedy's organization, is suing New York City right now, claiming that the PCR tests are illegal, immoral, and unscientific. And they're calling for the testing regime to not be mandatory. So they have an even bigger challenge than what we had. We're still waiting to hear from the judge on that.
And one more thing about that, sorry, Kenny. Can you say, because people don't really talk about, people kind of have let this whole testing thing kind of go as it relates to, so can you say a little bit more about, so one concern I hear there is it's essentially both privacy, right? Your right to your own DNA information. Two, not to have your own data exploited for money. We talk about data mining going on. Well, this is DNA mining now, what you're talking about. What are some other concerns that people either should be having when we think about PCR testing going on in schools?
Yeah, it's a very good question. So in August of 2020, just passed, even the New York Times came out with a detailed report saying that if you do a PCR COVID test on a healthy person, up to 90% of those positive results will actually be false positives, right? So we've seen this reported in a lot of places, but there it was right in the New York Times. We also saw in the same time in August of 2020, the NFL had 77 players test positive for COVID using a PCR COVID test by a company called BioReference Laboratories. Now, the NFL has very, very expensive testing protocols. So after they did that, they didn't stop there. They went to a second level of testing, Sanger sequencing, which is a more accurate, more expensive method. And they found all 77 of those who were said to have tested positive were false positives. That's a 100% false positive rate for those tests. And what's interesting about that is the NFL used BioReference Laboratories. BioReference Laboratories is the other laboratory that New York City Schools is using right now. And when New York City Schools uses BioReference Laboratories and they get a positive result, they don't check it. There's no double check. There's no Sanger sequencing. There's no second level or check like that at all. No, they just assume the person is positive. And if they get two positives in a school, they shut down the school for 2 weeks. So definitely problematic. The PCR testing, some people call it a gold standard. It's not a gold standard. It's substandard at best. And there definitely needs to be other protocols in place besides the PCR testing. But again, I want to say I'm not explicitly against utilizing testing in schools. I'm against it being mandatory. And I'm against us being in some Alice in Wonderland fairy tale that something that we know is flawed can't be flawed. So, yeah, that's kind of my position, I guess.
No, I'm just curious as to, you know, the reception of your position or the position of your organization, you know, in the community and, you know, within the union itself, because I think we are in a time where if you question science, you are a right winger, you know, and so I'm curious as to what your experience is regarding your position.
Yeah, I love that. When you question science, like, am I questioning science or am I exploring science, right? Am I like actually reading science? Am I actually thinking and analyzing science? For some reason, science and scientism has become like almost like religion, which is exactly the opposite of what science is supposed to be. So I love your question. So it's a mixed response. In my own school, I love my school. I love my colleagues, my principal. I have a great place that I work. It's been received quite well. A lot of people disagree with me, but they recognize my right to organize, my right to have my opinions, and they respect me because I'm not just coming out of nowhere with ridiculous things to say. And I appreciate that from my colleagues. There's people from my school that are on my email list that are paying attention. There's others that don't want to hear about it. We have administrators on our email list. So there's principals and assistant principals. I mean, they won't really admit it, you know, they won't go and tell people that, but they in emails do tell me, thank you for what you're doing. As far as the union is concerned, the union and the union leadership is not, from what I see, is not that fond of what I'm doing. They haven't directly responded to me. I've reached out to them in numerous occasions in numerous ways, but they have responded to me through reporters and through a newspaper in New York City that's over 100 years old called The Chief. The Chief Leader in New York City is the premier labor publication in New York City, century old. They just do a great job of covering issues from labor perspectives. And they're covering from our perspective, you know. They're not always in agreement with us, but they're definitely getting our message out. And every labor leader in New York City reads The Chief. So there are reporters who have confronted Mike Mulgrew, the president of the United Federation of Teachers, my union, with my words and with my open letters, and have forced him to answer those questions on the record. And just to go through that a little bit, in November 23rd, I believe it was, Mike Mulgrew in a UFT town hall said that the COVID vaccine would likely be mandatory in September of 2021. After that happened, our petition against vaccine mandates went from 4,000 signatures to like 15,000 in just a couple of days. So it was a very quick response that showed the UFT, whoa, you have thousands of members here that directly responded to what Mulgrew said. And then after we pressured and put open letters to him and the chief confronted him with my words, on February 4th, Mike Mulgrew held another town hall, telephonic town hall, where even Senator Chuck Schumer, who's now the majority leader of the Senate in Washington, D.C., joined the call and spoke with us as well, too. And after Schumer got off, Mike Mulgrew talked about the vaccine program they have in New York City. My union actually is running their own vaccine program. He was encouraging everybody to get vaccinated, but then he did say it is a teacher's individual choice. So that was a big shift from a few months earlier where he said it's probably going to be mandatory in September 2021 to now saying there was 20,000 educators on that call. For him to say that there publicly, we greatly appreciate that. You know, and I thank Mike Mulgrew for that. We thanked him on numerous occasions for that. But I am worried that when these emergency use vaccines finally get FDA approval, it could be a whole new ballgame. And they could say, well, now we can mandate it because it's not emergency use. So we're not backing down and we're not stopping our efforts now. We're actually picking them up. But we are glad to see that there has been responses to us, even when they really didn't want to respond to us. This is like the issue of the day, right? This is like the issue of our time. And people are very interested in what we're doing. They find it to be somewhat novel that here's these labor union people. I'm a progressive unionist, right? I'm not a right winger. I'm not conservative. I'm not a Republican. We do have conservatives in our caucus. You know, we do have Republicans that are a part. We span a very wide range of political beliefs coming together around this issue. But I'd say the majority of us are progressives or liberals that simply have this wild idea that what goes into our body is our choice, you know? So it's something that we're not going to be quiet about. And I feel also there's a lot of silent resistance too. People are very nervous and skeptical about what's going on. And sometimes all they need is to see someone stand up and say no. You know, no. And then they're like, oh, yeah, I want to say no, too. You know, so that's part of what we're trying to do. Create that space to say we're not saying anything crazy here. We're actually saying very rational, logical things. And what we're saying belongs in the conversation. So listen up, you know, and then speak up with us.
And what about students? Because in L.A., they were talking about students having to be vaccinated before they could go into the schools and be in person. Has there been any discussion there in New York?
Yeah. So for me, just to make it plain and clear, no forced COVID vaccinations for teachers or students. No forced flu shots for teachers or students. 110%, that is completely how we feel about it. Across the board, today and moving forward, regardless of what happens, we feel those must be choices. To give you one example of how I say this is more than COVID-19. In Massachusetts, they had a public health, I don't even think it was a law. I think it was just a health directive from the health officials there that required a flu vaccination for every student from pre-K till age 30. So if you were 30 years old attending a master's class, they were going to say you had to get a flu shot. But thankfully, Aaron Siri, again, who works with Dell Bigtree, and I can, they stopped that and they got that rescinded. So we're seeing all types of medical mandates creep up in all different areas and venues. One of the most recent things I'm seeing in the dialogue now is that, well, schools are mostly closed for in-person learning. We have them somewhat opening in New York City, but it's only a hybrid model. So it's not 5 days a week. If they get two positive COVID results, they shut down the school for 2 weeks. So it's not exactly open. And as the vaccine's being rolled out, especially parents who support us a lot are saying, well, we need to open up again. If you have the vaccine and you have, teachers have access to the vaccine, what is your argument against going to school. And the argument is starting to be, well, kids aren't vaccinated. And so that's going to present a problem, and that could spread as well too. It's a weak argument. I mean, all the signs that we've seen for children under 10 are not spreading this. Children over 10, it's a little bit different. Children over 14, I do understand people have concerns there that 14-year-olds and up seem to be similar to adults in the spread. But nevertheless, I mean, we have to wear masks when we're teaching in school. We have to have social distance between people. They're taking temperatures. We have to do health screenings. There are a lot of health and safety measures in place that to then also say, well, you have to get this shot, that actually is still experimental, that the trials don't end until 2022. We're going to force you to get this to show up to school. Teachers for Choice is completely against that for teachers and for students as well, too.
Michael, if I may, you in New York, you all had schools reopen at some point, whereas here in San Francisco, we haven't had them opened at all. What are your thoughts on reopening or having had that transition? And now I don't know if you all close again and then wait until. So if you can just share with us that experience, the reopening, the closing of schools again, because a lot of teachers here, my fellow educators, they just feel as if that's chaotic and that doesn't make any sense. And we're putting people's lives at risk. And if you could just comment on that.
Absolutely. Well, it has been chaotic. But I will compliment the head of our union, Mike Mulgrew, at making the attempt, because the majority of big city school districts didn't make any attempt at all. I appreciate that there was an attempt, but ultimately it was chaotic. It wasn't well planned, and it was open, shut a number of times. So we never fully opened. It was a hybrid opening, meaning that there were like A and B days or A, B, and C days, which got real crazy in trying to figure out which day you went to school and which day you didn't, where they were reducing class sizes dramatically. In some schools, they reduced the class sizes so much that teachers were reporting to school just to teach remotely still, because most of the students were home, but also a very large percentage of the teachers got medical exemptions based on CDC guidance that they didn't have to come to school either, and they could teach remotely as well too. So it became very difficult to staff all of the in-person education that was happening. There was also a lot of fear that was happening and a lot of mismanagement. One thing that happened was the CSA, which is the principals union and administrators union in New York City, for the first time in New York's history, had a vote of no confidence to the mayor and the head of the school system. That never happened. It was a unanimous vote saying, we have no confidence in you, right? Like one example that had been talked about a lot at the time is we got these thermometers sent to the school, and like you would take someone's temperature and, you know, it would say like 87.7, you know, 103.6. I mean, they were junk. They were garbage, you know? So there was principals and administrators, like, I'm telling parents, you know, to send their kids to the school, you know, we're going to take their temperature. And I know what they've provided us isn't working, you know? So there was, it was chaotic. And it was, for the principals, they were scared. They were scared something was going to go down bad in their school on their watch, right? So all of those things combined led to it being extremely chaotic. So I remember we were open in like, we delayed a month. We opened in October, November, right around or before Thanksgiving, we shut down because the infection rate raised to a certain point that the union said, if it gets to that point, we have to shut down. So they shut down all the schools. Then the city was sued. After they were sued, they opened up the schools for students with disabilities called District 75. In New York City, and they opened up elementary schools, but again, in a hybrid model, not 100%. And just today, middle schools opened again, but again, a hybrid model, not completely 100% open. So no question, it has been extremely chaotic for sure in New York City. So It's tough though. I still do believe that I appreciate they made the attempt, as poor of an attempt as it was. I still appreciate that because I want things to be safe. And I don't want to be in charge of this. So I don't know what all the right answers are either. And I don't want to just act like I know how to fix the system. I don't. I want things to be safe, and I want us to err on the side of caution if we're unsure what's happening. I don't want to see kids shuttered in, falling into depression, suicide rates spiking. There needs to be a balance between these things. We need to think about safety, not just of COVID. We need to think about the safety of our children and of society as well, too. Are these lockdowns really having the benefit that some people claim that they are? And that's where I'd like to see the conversation move to. I think it is. I think some parents are really trying to get the conversation there. But also, like I said a bunch of times here, real tricky call, real hard to figure this stuff out for everybody and to figure out what's really best.
If I may just follow up a little bit. So here in San Francisco, we just have a lot of teachers who say they just will not go back. And when we saw in Chicago, I think it's the third largest district in the country, if I'm correct, where they striked and they had a vote and did not go back. At least your district, as we already mentioned, it opened up. Was there massive resistance, even if there was no strike vote? Was there? Do you know from your personal experience, or also if you know the numbers, if there was massive resistance?
Yeah, there's definitely been resistance within the union and the rank and file. There's definitely a contingent of teachers that don't think we should be open at all, that are pointing to all of the other big cities that have gone fully remote. Some of these factions are even saying there's charter schools that are fully remote now, and I hate charters, but they made the right choice, and we need to do that too, right? So weird alliances happen through it as well too. And I do understand a lot of times they cite equity concerns. A lot of times they cite how COVID has disproportionately hit Black and brown communities and that we need to be remote and opening schools is racist. In my opinion, I think that goes a little bit too far. I understand the arguments and I understand where a lot of people are coming from, but I know Black and brown people that want schools closed, that want them open. Like, I don't see this as a racial issue. I see people on all sides of this from all races, right? I see all different types of perspective. And I feel like boiling this down just to Black and brown people want schools shut and white people want schools open, that's not what I'm seeing. But to address your question further, yes, there definitely is resistance. It's a vocal resistance. It's a substantial resistance. And that's not an easy place for the head of our union, Michael Mulgrew, to be, to try to balance that at the same time as he's trying to balance the city and parents and what they're trying to do. And I think what ended up happening, a lot of people are saying this, I'm not positive, but I think it's true. I think the compromise ended up being where Mulgrew said, we get two positive cases in a building, we're shutting it down. And a lot of people, including doctors and scientists, said, well, that's not actually necessary. And Mulgrew really did say, I don't care. That's what we're doing. And Mike Mulgrew is one of the most powerful men in New York City when it comes to education. And I think he got what he wanted there so that they were able to open the schools. But there are school buildings that shut down here so frequently because of this testing and because of this two positives and you're out rule that happens. So I think that ended up making things somewhat balanced. What you're seeing now is some people want to get rid of the two positive and you shut down the school. And there are teachers, like if you follow on social media and Twitter and you follow the different blogs out there that educators put out their thoughts, that are saying that two rule is gone, then we should go on strike, or I'm going to stop paying union dues. So there's all of this dialogue that's going on there definitely is a major faction of teachers in New York City that do want the schools to be fully remote. Yeah, there are.
And just to be clear, the testing that did go on, that was not mandatory testing. That was people agreeing to be tested, and then they came up with cases. Is that correct?
No, not really. It was really mandatory testing. So in terms of mandatory testing in New York City, right now, the the city and the union says if you refuse the test as a teacher, you will be placed on unpaid leave. This is really shocking to me that this is what my union is. And they say you can't grieve it. There's no grievance process. You will be placed on unpaid leave. But when rubber hits the road, is that what the principals are really doing? I'm hearing both. I think there were a handful of teachers that did go out on unpaid leave because they refused. And I think there's a lot of others that they haven't been asked to test, right? So they haven't signed the consent and their principals haven't asked them. Because like I said, when rubber hits the road, we have principals teaching classes now in New York City sometimes. We have a teacher shortage. People aren't like flocking to be a teacher right now, right? If anything, we have a huge amount planning their retirements and planning their needs to leave. And principals need good teachers. Principals like good teachers. So if the only thing that you've done is you say, I'm not consenting to that, but you're like doing a million great things as a teacher. And remember, the principals have voted no confidence in the administration, in Mayor de Blasio and in the head of schools, Richard Carranza. So it's not like the principals are in lockstep with everything that the city is demanding. So so it is technically mandatory right now, but every school building seems to be operating differently. They don't always enforce that.
I have a question that backtracks a little bit, just to get a sense of what actually is going on in the New York school district. So when we say hybrid, it almost frames the issue as being 50-50. Is that the case in New York? Is there a sense of, you know, how many kids, what's the percentage of kids that are actually in classrooms? Is it small? Do you have a sense of that?
Yeah, that's a good question. It varies from building to building. Keep in mind, all middle and high school students were 100% remote up until today or tomorrow, where middle schools open. All high school students are fully remote still. A lot of the major high school buildings in New York City are being used as vaccination sites right now. So some people argue, how can we open that? We need to vaccinate more people. So we can't open the high schools right now. And when you say about hybrid being 50-50, no. I don't believe it's 50-50 at all. You definitely don't have 50% of the students getting education in person. At best, they're getting 2 days a week. Some kids were getting 1 day a week in person. So it's definitely not 50-50. It's definitely favoring more of the remote education right now.
And we've been talking at once left a lot about education, a lot about the reopening of schools, Operation Warp Speed and things like this. And I think, at least from us, we've been much more trying to understand what's going on in education, much more in terms of the Fourth Industrial Revolution, Great Reset, data mining, surveillance. Like, that is much more what we believe here is as the narrative that you have to understand what's happening versus safety, PPEs, ventilation, and things like that. Where do you fall on those spectrums? Because that really, I mean, most of my colleagues really fall much more on the safety, PPE, the virus, infection rates and things like that. Where do you fall on, for yourself and personally on that spectrum of what you're worried about in terms of the present and our future as it relates to, like, say, education?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. I'm extremely concerned about the reimagined education agenda. On May 5th in New York City, when we were still at the height of the COVID crisis happening here and everything was shut down and everybody is glued to their TVs to watch the now embattled Governor Andrew Cuomo and doing his daily pressers. On May 5th, he came out and he said, why do we still teach so many children inside these big buildings when we have all this technology? And announced this partnership with Bill Gates and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to reimagine education. One of the people that is on that panel is Randy Weingarten. Randy Weingarten is the head of the American Federation of Teachers, the AFT, which is the national umbrella for my union, the UFT. Cuomo got slapped back quick the very next day. People were like, what are you talking about? You can't replace in-person education. And he was like, oh, yeah, yeah, well, that's what I meant. But we're still going to do this panel. We still got to reimagine something, right? I thought this was like a crash program. I thought Reimagine Education was in response to this emergency that we were dealing with. And I was just completely uneducated. It was not at all. And it was actually Allison McDowell and her work at wrenchinthegears.com that, when I came across, showed that Reimagine Education has been in the pipeline for at least 5 years or more. And the heads of the unions have already signed off on it, including Randy Weingarten, who is on the Reimagine Education panel in New York to reimagine education in New York. That flipped my whole thinking process about what's going on now, this new shock doctrine of what's happening to education from COVID, and what the unions are doing. Because it's I'm still trying to process this. Reimagine Education means, by definition, I don't know when, it means less teachers. That's what it's going to mean. It's going to mean less teachers. It's going to be one teacher teaching 250 kids at a distance, maybe 20 in front of you, 220 remote, cameras on you. These are the, and eventually probably moving to AI, yeah, doing the teaching, and then having, you know, 1-800 dial a teacher for $9.99 of somebody that's just kind of, you know, whatever, on a chat, you know, seeing what the problems are and just facilitating this. And I've actually seen over the past 10 years, administrators start saying teachers shouldn't be called teachers. They should be called facilitators. That's, for some reason, that jargon started over the past 10 years. I still don't understand what the unions are doing. The only thing I understand about it is, I know this for sure, when the unions see bipartisan support for something, when they see the Republicans and the Democrats support something, they usually don't fight it. What they then do is they say, how can we benefit? How can we get a piece to the pie? The only thing that makes sense to me right now, and I'm open to what other people have to say about this, is that the unions right now are fighting over crumbs, and they just want whatever they can get from whatever this new reimagined education is going to look like. I'm extremely concerned about it. I'm frightened about it, for sure. And when it comes to the PPE side of things, my colleagues, for the most part, are extremely, extremely scared about being in the classroom, about teaching again. And it's not fake for most of them. It's real. They're really scared. The media has done a great job of scaring the crap out of them. And because of that, Teachers for Choice hasn't taken a position on things like masks in classrooms. We have people that are a part of our caucus completely opposed to wearing masks, who believe in wearing masks sometimes, believe in wearing masks and double masks all the time. So it's a sensitive topic, because I have people that want to go to school, want to teach in school, want to wear a mask, want to get the vaccine, all of that, but are still a part of what we're doing, want choice in whether or not they get the vaccine, want schools open, but want them open safely with PPE. So I'm very much on board with what you guys are talking about. I'm extremely concerned about Reimagined Education, the fourth industrial revolution, what's happening in Davos with the World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab, what he's saying. Some of it just sounds like insanity straight out of like a science fiction book, but it's real. And he's saying it. He's an extremely powerful person. We can point to it and cite it in his own book, in his own words, some crazy stuff. And I'm extremely concerned about all of that. But I'm trying to, and New York Teachers for Choice is trying to, cast as wide a net as possible to get as many people on board. Because some people aren't ready to hear all of it, but they are ready to hear things like, let me choose. Let me have a choice in this. Don't force me to do this to keep my job. So that's where I stand and where the organization stands.
And it just seems like, in general, anything in, we're being pushed for more tech in education, Michael Caine. If you can just, what is your position on tech even before you got understood Allison McDowell's Wrenching the Gears information and her research about it? I just feel as if we have been blindsided because we think that tech was a tool that we could use, a technology that is fundamental to now teaching. It's part of the new 21st century world.
Prior to learning about Alison McDowell and her brilliant analysis of education and what's happening, especially with technology, I was kind of blind to what was about to happen and to what was going on. I taught in person for 13 years. I interact with students, in close proximity for that entire time. I don't know if I had ever taught a child through a Google Meet or a Zoom or anything like that, all the way up to COVID. I don't think I ever did. It was always an entirely in person. I emailed students, and we had that sort of communication, right? But I just saw technology as a minor tool. At one point, administration came to me and said, "Hey, Mike, you have all of these lesson plans and all of these notes that you're keeping. How about we get you an iPad? You could keep it there, and then you could just share your lessons with us, and that sort of a thing." I said, "That's interesting. I think I'll break it. I'll do that if I'm not responsible for it, right? Because I like my papers that like there's nothing, And so I kind of just opted more towards pen and paper and that sort of a thing. So this has been eye-opening for me as well too, going through COVID, hearing about reimagined education, and then discovering Alison McDowell in 2017 saying the national agenda is to close as many brick and mortar schools as possible. And everybody laughed at her and said, "What are you talking about? How are they going to close the schools?" Now, here we are in 2021. No one can afford to laugh at her because look at what's happening and look what's going on. And how is it possible? This was being planned that long ago. So my learning curve is increasing now because, I learned about Alison maybe 3 months ago, So I'm doing a lot of reading, doing a lot of reading and a lot of catching up. And thank God for what she's doing because she really is just one of my heroes. The work she's doing is just fantastic.
Yeah, and I guess I would want to ask you also, you've been teaching for 14 years. This is my 21st year. I was on a Zoom call at a professional development last week with a colleague who normally would be across the room from me, and she's been teaching art. Like, I'm a science teacher, she's an art teacher. And there was another art teacher, and we were discussing this year. And the teacher who is across the way, she is a very enthusiastic teacher there every day and stuff like this. And she was saying how this is the first year where she's really been thinking about retiring, where it's just been miserable. Resonated with me because like maybe a 5 or 6 years I was thinking, but this has been a year that I would say has just been really awful as a teacher for me. Now, the other teacher, though, I will say, was like, this has been a great year for me. I've been kind of like free to be by myself in some ways and self-explore and things like this. So it hasn't been awful for everyone. But for me, it's been an awful educational experience, completely alienated and stuff like this. That was true for another colleague. But other people are like, there's some really good things going on with this new thing. I just wonder, on a personal level as a teacher, what's it been like for you?
So, I lean a little bit more towards you. I love working with children. I love helping children. I love connecting. And there's much less of that. The thing that's toughest for me is kids that are brand new to me that I've never met, that I'm only seeing through a screen, sometimes only seeing an avatar of them. That's the saddest. And the other one is I am a special education teacher. So the students that I work with that have extra needs, this is a nightmare. This is terrible for them. And that's universally kind of acknowledged. But not enough has been done about that. So I feel very sad about that. But I do want to say to teachers like you, yourself and others who are having a horrible year, please hang in, because we don't need all of our best educators leaving right now and leaving a void where, techno edutainment and gamification, that's the other thing that's coming as well too, to just swoop in and entirely take over what's going on. I feel like we need resistance. We need voices like yours and myself on Teachers for Choice that are fighting for ourselves and for our kids as well too. So, and another thing that's been very tough, and this is also part mentioned in a recent lawsuit that I'm glad is out there and I support. I'll be teaching one of my students and I just see their avatar, you know, and I'll just be like, Jalen, could you answer or read bullet point number 5? And Jalen unmutes her microphone and it sounds like Grand Central Station.
Yeah.
You know, Jalen lives in a one bedroom apartment with 9 people that live there and 5 of them are there in that moment. Right. So how is this is actually separate and unequal education. It's actually even worse than that. It's separate, unequal, and isolated education. And there is a case in New York City right now called Avilés versus de Blasio. It's in federal court. And that case is challenging schools being closed and is also challenging the mandatory COVID testing for kids to attend in-person learning. And in terms of challenging school closures, they're citing things like Brown versus the Board of Education, you know, and saying that you cannot have students that are like this fictional Jalen, I said, who's in a one bedroom apartment with 9 people there learning remote compared to, you know, Johnny and Jane, who are in a 6 bedroom house with 3 people in it, right? Their remote experience of education is going to be much different. So we actually, remote education is right now, the way it's functioning is very separate and very segregated. And possibly we can make an argument that it is being delivered in a racist manner as well, too. So that's been my experience. The kids that I've known for years that I still work with and I teach, we're still able to get past the technological divide because we know each other. Because there is a relationship there. Because I know I met their parents at parent-teacher conference. There's all of that there. So I'm not happy with what's happened over the past year. I'm not leaving, not going to leave education. I'm staying, I'm fighting for teachers, for parents, and for kids.
What do you think we have to do to fight this? All the stuff that's kind of right now doing, what are some of the things that come to mind? Because that's a loaded question. So answer it in whatever way you choose. But are there things you think about that you would tell yourself or the teachers? What is that fight going to look like?
Yeah, for me, first and foremost, it means resisting every single medical mandate they try to put in front of us to be a teacher or to be a student. We've talked a lot about the COVID testing. In New York City, 12,000 students were kicked out of in-person education and forced into remote because their parents wouldn't sign the COVID consent. So now that's in court right now. Hopefully that one goes the right way. There's resistance there. Earlier, before COVID, June 13th, 2019, 26,000 students were kicked out of school throughout New York State because they got rid of the religious exemption to vaccination. Very few people paid attention to that because it didn't affect enough people. But when that happened, 26,000 kids kicked out throughout the state. Now, we have 12,000 kids just in New York City kicked out. What's the trend here? Every year I'm seeing kids kicked out of in-person education. We need to resist this in every way possible. So for me, the very beginning of the resistance is at medical mandates. And also we need to collaborate and make alliances with those that are sympathetic to us or also have other agendas. Right now, the parents that want to get their kids in school are following what me and my group are doing and reaching out to me and asking me to speak up even more and more for going full open schools. And I'm doing that somewhat, but also I still have some teachers that are against medical mandates that are resisting that a little bit, right? So I got to bring them along too. So it's definitely an education process. Resist all medical mandates. And you got to do this stuff. Don't be quiet. Now is not the quiet time. Now is not the time to resist silently or to just talk to your wife or your spouse or your buddy who you trust. No, now is the time to be loud and be in people's faces about this. It's the only way we're going to win this. And the thing is, I got to say, I'm somewhat optimistic because I feel we have the silent majority. on this. We don't have everybody, and there's millions that think I'm crazy and don't support me, and that's fine. All I want is the opportunity to debate them and to discuss with them and to have the forum. But I know for sure, I am positive, there are tens of millions of Americans that agree with what I'm saying, that agree with the direction that we want to go. We need to show them through our leadership that they can speak up and that there's a place for them to be able to be brave, right? We need that leadership. I don't want there to be a void in leadership. I don't really want to be doing this. You know, I mean, I have two young kids. I have a wife. I like teaching. I kind of want to do other stuff. There's no choice right now. There's no choice right now. I need to be doing this. If I want to be in education, this is how I have to be in education. So I just want to inspire others to speak up, reach out to us, come to our website, nyteachersforchoice.org. Send me an email. You'll be on our email list. I'm responding to all the emails that are coming there and getting a lot. You know, a lot of people are very interested in this. So I think that's where it starts. You got to speak up. Don't be silent. Now is not that time.
Yeah, one last question, and this is actually like, so if you're a teacher like me who have been outspoken about things, but I haven't really started down this road around medical mandates and things like that, what would be your advice? How do you start that fight around those sorts of things if you don't necessarily know a lawyer or what have you? What's your advice on how to get started on fighting on that front?
Yeah, so the first one I think is the testing. If they're requiring any testing in the schools that you're in, you need to get all the information possible about it. You need to find out everything. Is it mandatory? Can you submit an outside test to them? Who are the laboratories that they're contracting with? Where are the contracts? Who holds the contracts? Let me see the contracts. Give me the contracts. These are public contracts, so you can't keep them secret. They will try to keep them secret. You need to file a Freedom of Information request with them. You should try to link up with lawyers if you can. If you can't, you can do it on your own. And you can definitely reach out to me. I'll walk you through that. We even have a post on the homepage of our website at nyteachersforchoice.org. If you just scroll down to about the middle of our homepage, there's a big link about my schools are forcing testing. And you can click on that and you can go through all of those things. Also, find people of like mind, even one other person. I started this with one other teacher. That's how it started. When we put up a blog, right? And then I told the teachers that I worked with. That was a scary moment, right? Telling them all. But I didn't start with the scariest stuff. I didn't start with, you know, Fourth Industrial Revolution, right? I didn't start with what they're doing in the World Economic Forum. I started at a different place because I wanted to try to, like I said, get a bigger net around it. And we're talking about all that stuff, right? That stuff, I'm talking about it with you here, and we're going to continue to do that. But everybody has a different entry point. So if you're one, all you have to do is become two, and things could happen, because it definitely has happened for us. I have teachers in LA reaching out to me now. They're about to start their own version of Educators for Choice or something like that. They have about 10 teachers right now that are involved. A number of them are chapter leaders in their schools. That's good, because that's a powerful union position in their schools. We're hearing more and more about this. So don't worry about being too small. One is only too small. Once you're two, you're not too small. Find one other person and it can snowball from there, because it really has for us.
Eduardo will love what you just said.
Andy and I disagree about how to go about this, to present this work. You know, I centered around children's privacy and he centers it around Fourth Industrial Revolution. Watch out.
Right, right. And I'm like, I it's not an either or though, right? It's definitely not an either or. It's not you either do this or you do that. It's just, I meet somebody, I start to talk to them, I feel them out, and I try to see where their entry point is, you know, if there is one. You know, some people are ready to go into the Fourth Industrial Revolution and how it's going to just take away all our jobs, the mechanization of everything. I saw in New York City, in my own town where I live, one of these robo dogs that was raiding a home. This is becoming regular now, that there's robo dogs that are patrolling the world. I mean, like, you know, come on, wait, is this what we want? This is good? This is going to help us? So I don't think there's no space for it. I think we do need to make sure we go there and we get there and let people know. It's just a matter of when and how, depending on the person, you know.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Michael.
Thanks a lot, Michael. This has actually been really good. And I'm really excited to kind of send this out to at San Francisco Unified and other teacher sites that I know.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it as well, too. There's not a lot of teachers and educators I talk to that are as hip to what's going on as you guys. So it was really exciting and nice for me. Usually I'm talking to like reporters and newspaper people and podcaster people that aren't us, that aren't educators. You know what I mean? So that this is the first time for me that I had educators say, hey, let's talk about this and do this. And like, and even some of the lingo, I got to like, I don't have to explain every single thing. Like we can kind of just talk as educators a little bit. It was very cool as well too. This is a great experience.
Well, we can thank Allison McDowell. I called her over the summer because I was trying to figure out what the heck is really going on. And it messed my life up to find out what was going on.
Yeah, hey, me too. But, and you know, and this is important too. Every single day I find joy. I'm very blessed. My family's healthy. We take care of ourselves well. And just very simple ways to live a good life. I have people reach out to me all the time. Every email is doom and gloom. And I even got to write a piece and do something about it. So you got to find joy. You got to be happy, right? When you're facing so much, it's even that much more important to have joy in your life and to laugh and to have good things. So I also make sure of that as well too. Otherwise, how am I going to continue? You know, how are we going to continue doing this if it's just like, oh my God, what's happening? You know?
I hope I can find that place where I can be happy.
It doesn't have to be all the time. You just need like a little piece of it. My big thing right now is I'm not being quiet enough. Like I'm not like, the prayer and the meditation isn't as much in my life anymore. And I feel I need that too. That energizes me. So that's another thing. That's where I'm off a little bit now. But with the two kids, the job and Teachers for Choice and stuff, it's hard. But it's a work of passion. You know, I love all of this stuff that I'm doing. And I love that I connected with you guys. I hope you stay in touch and figure out how to continue doing this and build this. Yeah. You know, from your coast to mine, you know.
Thanks a lot.
Well, that does it for this week's episode. Michael Kane is a New York teacher, member of the United Federation of Teachers Union, and part of the steering committee that continues to grow for New York Teachers for Choice, an emergency union caucus comprised of teachers and parents that are 100% against forced medical mandates for any U.S. American to keep their job, especially educators. We'll link to your work, Michael, New York Teachers for Choice. What's Left is a weekly political podcast as channel challenging the mainstream left. We post information about our topics and our guests on the episode notes wherever you find this episode or on our blog at what-s-left.webnode.com. You can find past episodes to this podcast on the channel there and connect with us. I remind folks, if you like anything that you have heard here, such as Michael's interview here, please share your favorite episode, rate, review, turn on your notifications, subscribe to any of our 8 platforms on Podcast, Spotify, iTunes Podcast, Stitcher, Google Play, or channels on BitChute, Libri, or Library, LBRY, and Odyssey, spelled ODYSEE, or YouTube. And if you would like to give us feedback about something you've heard or suggest something for us to cover, contact us through our blog. I'm Eduardo Barca with co-host teacher Toshile Sandy Lipson and Kenny Cepeda, community organizer. Thank you very much, Michael.
Thank you guys so much. It was great to be with you.